And today we are focusing on welcome and inclusion. If you are new, or if you are visiting this church, I do hope that you felt welcomed as you came in. I hope that there was a warm greeting on the door, but not too warm, that it wasn't uncomfortable. Because one of the things that we've looked at is things like how we greet people. The front door greeting. We're also looking at our building and the ambience that projects and how we communicate the message of welcome and being an appropriate setting for people to come to use the building for its purposes and to worship. So we're looking at that, and as Ted said, there is a meeting on Wednesday actually when we're looking at that whole issue of where we go from here with our building. So again, we're addressing that issue. And we're also been looked at our own behaviours, actually. Dan Satch, our youth leader, showed a really brilliant DVD of where Starbucks does church. I don't know if you were in that Sunday. But basically, where it looked at, it was a DVD based around if Starbucks, church was run like a Starbucks cafe, what would it look like? And it helped to shine in some sort of behaviours that were a little bit uncomfortable. And particularly if you've been around the churches a long time, you kind of... I know I sort of thought, yes, there were some of my behaviours in my early Christian days that were a little bit too similar to what was going on there. And actually, people coming into new into our church want people to be real. They want to go into a real coffee shop. They want to come into a real church where the people behave in a real way that is appropriate. And going on from that, though, there is something that is much more, goes a bit deeper, doesn't it? Because those are the initial, if you like, the first impressions of welcome as a church. But there are deeper forms of welcome, and that is what I'd call how we are included, as how people feel as though they're inclusion. Can we have the next slide, please? It says, people are welcomed regardless of what they have done, where prodigals are received with open arms and not with religious judgmentalism. The first reading today was taken from Luke 15, and it was basically this wonderful, well-known example of, that Jesus gave of this young man who went away from his father's house because he wanted a more interesting life, so he thought. And he went away and he spent his money unwisely and he came back. One of the things which we as a church, when we start to grow, when we start to reach out more and people start to come back, one of the first things that you can expect to happen is that prodigals will return. When the church starts to shine and become a salt and light, the prodigals will feel a call back and will start to come through our door looking for the answers to life, looking for acceptance. And they will come with the expectation, however much they know about the word of God from previous experience of as children or whatever, they will know, they will be expecting rejection. It is a natural instinct as a prodigal, and I've been there, to expect rejection. So when you come back in, how quickly you are welcomed and included back into the church community is key. That first action that we give to people who are coming back in is really key. Do they feel welcomed? Do they feel included? Do they feel trusted again? Do they feel loved? But we also look, can I have the second slide, please? Next slide, sorry. There are other people who will be coming through our doors too. And these are people who will come from all sort of diverse walks of life. There'll be people who are single, divorced, widowed, orphaned, and disabled, etc., etc. in education, when I worked in education, one of the things that was a key thing was the word inclusion and diversity. And you looked at the whole range of different issues which people might have and made sure that you were catering for each of those issues. And so what I want to, if you like, challenge us all, and me in particular, is as people come in carrying a suitcase of whatever they might be bringing into church with, are we ready to meet them where they're at? Are we ready to meet their needs? The simple things are, like, is there a disabled ramp? Yes. Do we have those sorts of things in place? But it's much more, isn't it? For the people who are single, widowed, who are already in our church, quick ask, are we meeting your needs? Are their needs being met? The simple model that's very easy to feel comfortable in is the family environment, isn't it? The close family environment where there's kids, children, and you're all part of that family, local family environment. But there will be people who are in this church fellowship and who are coming into this fellowship who are single and are lonely. And we need to make sure that as a church fellowship, we bind them in to the church's family life and make them feel welcome and part of it. We cater really well, I think. One of the areas that I think we cater really well for is children and young people. We've put a lot of time and thought into how we cater for children. I'm sure if you ask the church, youth leaders, particularly Dan, you could say, yeah, there's areas where we could improve. But we put a lot of effort and have put in a lot of effort into children and young people for some time, with good reason. All the evangelism statistics shows that most people make a commitment between the ages of 12 and 18. So there's real, I think there's things like the 80% of people who make a Christian commitment during their life make it during that period. So it is really important that we do focus on serving the children and the young people. But it's also important to look at others. And Jesus was the par exceptional, wasn't he, at meeting people where they were at. As I was reading through Luke, I went on a bit further from that and look at Luke 18 through to 19. And Jesus met with three very different characters during these passages. First of all, it starts off with a rich young man of what you might call good moral character. He was a law-abiding citizen by the Jewish laws, and he said to Jesus, I'd like to follow you, and Jesus said, well, do you keep the law? Do you keep the laws? And ever since I was a child, I have kept the laws. Then Jesus said to him, go and give away your wealth. And the guy sloped off because he was very rich. But basically, the guy's commitment level was only lukewarm. When it came to being full-blooded, he wasn't really ready to make that commitment. And then Jesus also dealt with a blind man, a blind beggar, who probably smelt a bit. And as he's walking past, he cried out to Jesus, and Jesus went back to him and said, what can I do for you, my son? And the guy said, I want to, you're Jesus, you can heal me. And he said, yes, by your faith, you've been healed. And so that guy who's down there begging and low down, Jesus lifts him up. Further on the road to Jericho, there's somebody else who climbs a tree, Zacchaeus. And this guy is a tax collector. Basically, he's a corrupt official. He's corrupt local, a corrupt civil servant, working on behalf of the detested Roman government. And he's using his position to claim extra tax off the people and rob them of their wealth, their livelihood. And because he's short in stature, he climbs a tree to see who Jesus is. And he was probably thinking, I'm also quite far out of the way here. I'll be able to see Jesus, but he's not going to come, you know, not going to get in my sight. But Jesus spots him, and he pulls him down from the tree and says, I'm coming, not just that I want to have a word with you, but I'm going to come to your house for lunch. I'm going to come to your house for a meal. And that, in the cultural time, was very much an acceptance. He accepted the man where he was at. Because it was, if you ate with sinners, it was looked down upon to be actually eating with people who were either, as they were termed, sinners, wrongdoers, but also people who were lower status than yourselves. It was not the done thing. And yet Jesus said, I'm going to come to your house. So he met with all those three individuals in very different ways, but he made them very aware that there were issues that they needed to deal with, but they were welcome to be included. And that's what we're being called to do. To welcome people into us and willing to include them, but obviously be aware and be wise as to how we deal with the issues that they come in with us, it may come in with. And that's being wise to deal with those issues isn't something that we can just assume as Christians that we have. Way back in the 90s, soon after I sort of recommitted my life to the Lord, an opportunity came up for me to join a Christian charity that worked with jobless people. And I just thought at the time, oh, there's people who are unemployed. But actually, there were people who had an unemployed lifestyle, who were not just looking for work, but people who weren't looking for work, who were people who were a very, very long way off being ready to go into the workplace. And to be honest, when I went into that role, I was not equipped assist them. So the first thing I needed to do was to actually learn about what their needs were, what their real needs were, and to gain some expertise in how to help them. So obviously I did that. But I think as church, we need to be very aware that as people come through the door with different needs, that we may not always be able to cater for those needs. And we have to ask ourselves, do we have to help them by pointing them outside to get outside assistance? Or do we have to, as a church, decide to grow in our own expertise in the area where those people's needs are? Is that how we really welcome people? By actually willing to learn about what their needs are and how we can help them? So we need to be quick to listen and then to do. Because in that second reading in James, James talks about, we need to listen. Listen rather than talk, and then do. Because he talked about faith and love being doing words rather than just speaking words. I like to think that the church, somebody once said to me, and I'd like to remember who, but the church is not a club for the piously superior, but a home for the spiritually thirsty. And I would like to think that, when people come into our fellowship, that we are a fellowship where we will give them something to drink. But that needs to move on quite quickly. Because when soon after people come in, the first priority of the people is not what they can get, but what they can give. And love is not merely with deeds, but with words, but with deeds. People need an opportunity to be able to give and to serve. So that when we're welcoming and including them, the part of that inclusion process then quickly moves to where can they fit into the body and where can they start to serve. One of the great things when I joined my last fellowship as this, as I say, prodigal returning, was that I didn't know where to serve. There seemed to be everywhere seemed to be covered, and I didn't have a particular skill set that was going to be appropriate to serving anywhere. But what I did have was a car, and a lady by the name of Anne Gorman, and I think Ted and Leslie will have known. I think Anne, if Anne Goodall's in, she knew too, but in the past. This lady, Anne Gorman, said to me, would I be willing to give a lift to the teens to a youth event over in Manchester? And so that's how I very quickly became involved in the youth work and spent 10 years from that moment on serving in youth work, learning as I went. But it started, was I willing to give kids a lift to Manchester? So we need quite quickly to find where people's giftings and skills are at and include them. One of the things which, one of the things which we're called to be, Peter said in Peter 1 Peter says, we call a chosen people and a royal priesthood. And priesthood means to serve and to minister. So we're all called to be servants. And so we have whatever gifting that we have, we're called to quickly, once joining that fellowship, to serve with each other. And it's important also to give get the balance right between giving and receiving. As people join us, they may have strong expectations about receiving. In 95, I was 20 years ago now. I was writing up this up, I thought, oh, that's 1995. That's 20 years ago. It doesn't seem that long ago. I was fortunate enough to go to Zambia, and we went out. I went to support a group of leaders to go and visit churches in Zambia, and to see where they needed, who were in fellowship with, and see where they needed some additional support. And if anybody knows Zambia and that area, there's what's called the Copper Belt in northern Zambia. And we had some connections with churches out there. And some of the connections were through the church, and some of them were just personal relationships. And as we got to know, meet the needs, got to know what the needs were, it became sort of very, and hear my heart here. We went to find out what people wanted, where we could serve them more. But it came quite quickly obvious where in the different churches that they were, for some, there was an expectation that we were there to give. They were basically looking, that their faith was based in receiving rather than giving. There was an expectation that the Western churches would meet their need. And people would often quite happily, they recognised that we were a Western church leaders coming out to see them. And even people from who we had no relationships with whatever, felt quite comfortable with coming to us and saying, we have this need for a new church building, etc. Would you please give us £40,000 towards the cost of it? Is that sort of level of expectation, which had grown up over years of, I suppose, colonialism and the relationship with the West. And sadly, there was a real lack of faith within their own church about how they could meet their own needs and the needs to grow from within. And it's not that we didn't want to, weren't there to support them, you know, those that we had relationships with. Of course we were. But we had to do so wisely. That would help to sow rather than just to provide. And so, yeah, there were some real needs. You know, we were looking about how to meet the needs of a Bible college so that, you know, you could grow the church leaders. And buildings. You know, one church that we went to, were they met in currently at the time in a chicken coop within the home of, you know, the pastor. They were quite common to have everybody have a chicken run, you know, an enclosed chicken run where, which would be about half the length of the width of this room, and that's where they kept their chickens. And they would convert that to a church. So obviously there was real need there for, you know, building provision so people could come together. But yeah, we also went, you know, with all this expectation and need, we also went to the a church within the Angolan refugee camp. On Zambia has a, as you may know, has a border with Angola, and there was a war throughout the 70s which produced, and 80s, which produced a big refugee population. And on, in western Zambia, there is a refugee camp which is about 70 kilometres square. And there's a road, basically marked out, road every kilometre going that way, you know, grid line fashion. And within this 70 kilometre refugee camp, there was a church which we had a relationship with. And we went to meet with and encourage this fellowship. And obviously, they had so much need. Yeah, they didn't have much more than what they stood up in. They didn't have, you know, great any of the things which we would material possessions which we would, you know, take for granted. They didn't have even long-term security, knowing that they didn't know how long they would be there before they were moved back out. They had the ability to grow crops, to feed themselves, and to keep animals. But that's how they existed. And they were overjoyed to see us. And they gave us the biggest feast that we could imagine. They gave us chicken, you know, a roast chicken dinner with lots of vegetables, etc. And we felt, you can imagine what we felt like. You know, there they were giving off their very, very best to us. And you kind of say, look, you know, we want to, you know, what you have it, please. You know, you've, but of course, they wanted to bless us. And then we joined them in a time of, you know, a celebration. And three people stood up to give requests about for what we could provide for them. Because we said, we've come to bless you, and, you know, we'd like to give you something. What would you, how can we bless you? And they came back with three things. They wanted a guitar, because that would help them with their worship. They wanted a sewing machine, because they wanted to be able to make and repair clothes. And they wanted a bike, because their pastor currently had to walk the 10 kilometers square where people lived who came to this fellowship. And really, that was, if we could provide a bike for him, he'd be able to get around and to meet people. So where the need was so great, there was this faith and love and lack of greed. And it stayed with me, obviously, last 20 years. And I still remember the kid who just wouldn't leave my side. There's a little child called Albert. And for whatever reason, he just came and he wanted to hold my hand, and he wouldn't let me go. He was quite... I needed to use the loo at one stage, and it was a little bit, you know, I had to sort of disengage myself from him. But bless him, you know, there was that wonderful just love and generosity. So, just to conclude, welcoming goes much deeper, doesn't it, than just the front door and the ambience. Inclusion and how we weave people into the fellowship goes much deeper. And giving people an opportunity to serve and grow in their faith is the real thing of how we will grow our church. Amen.